Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer. So let's bring her out. The star attraction. The one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. Judy Gold.
Today is an extra special.
Extra
special.
It's extra double wide special.
It's extra wide and it's easy. Today is going to be an easy Kill Me Now podcast.
A nice wide easy.
Easy wide.
Kill Me Now.
You know, I've always said that I have a wide ass.
I've always agreed with you.
Yeah. Shut up. But today, I mean, we have a legend in the house.
We do.
A legend.
Yeah, you've got a couple of them.
I love this guy. All right, first of all, I love him because he's so smart.
Yeah. Remember when I introduced you guys? That was me. I introduced you guys.
I have to let you know that I have been getting emails about the interruptions. So, I'm not kidding.
You know what? I would just like...
Because I was just introducing him, and you just cut in with... And I introduced them. So let me finish my thought.
Well, the emails I get are... They enjoy my interruptions.
Okay. Well, those four people are idiots. Anyway. So, the reason I love this guy... Smart. Creative. Life experience beyond, you know, has lived many lives, I think.
Like a cat.
At least as many as a cat.
At least as many as a cat. It's not often you meet someone who has had such a major impact on your life since you're 16 years old, 17 years old.
Same here, since I was 16.
Interruption. And, and you find out that this person is such, is like in a beyond incredible multi-dimensional human being. And that's what we have today on Kill Me Now. And his name is Bert Rubin, ladies and gentlemen!
No, thank you very much.
Yes, Bert Rubin.
Thank you.
Among other things, but claim to fame for a lot of people would be that he invented the Easy Wider rolling paper.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir.
And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yes. Thank you for making things easy for me when I was 16 in New Jersey. And I still purchase your product. Because to me, it's the product. There's no other product but the brown Easy Widers.
Easy Wider, Easy Wider, Easy Wider.
Right. Easy Wider.
When I put together the cigarette paper company, I didn't realize the effect actually that it in the end would have in terms of how many people would end up using the product on a daily or weekly basis, and also the growth of marijuana use in America.
Right.
30 years ago, I thought marijuana was going to be legal all over America.
Yeah, I read that, yes.
In 10 years.
Cue siren sound.
It's 30 years, and a handful of states have made it legal. And with conditions, except in Colorado and somewhat in California.
Right. But it's absolutely, you know, for me, and I, my son's in college, and I've told him I would prefer that you smoke marijuana and not drink. And then I read an article in the Times from a doctor whose children were growing up, and she wrote that, you know, I know my kid's going to party.
Experiment.
Right. And
teenagers experiment.
Right. And it is much safer to smoke pot than it is. First of all, the other thing is, has anyone gotten stoned and then beaten their wife? Has anyone,
right,
you know?
Or overdosed.
Right.
Have you read an article about somebody
who
went out and smoked some grass and...
Not smoked. Wait, I'm closing the window. In New York City. It's not smoked, but I had... There was one kid I read who, you know, ate too many edibles
is an entirely different thing. There's a chemistry involved with eating tetrahydrocannabinol that's very different than smoking.
Right.
It's processed through your liver, that's why, right? And through your bloodstream.
That's the case. And it's also the amount. You can eat a great amount more than you could possibly smoke, or the ingestion through smoke.
Right, and it takes 2 hours for an edible to kick in.
And
then it's hours.
Right.
And then the next day you feel like
actually,
shit. Not that I've ever had any.
I still
I've had a bunch.
Smoke marijuana regularly.
Right.
It's my drug of choice.
Right.
Same here.
I'm
just going to interrupt you.
When I think of drugs, I think of very, very early on, and I've told this story many times, about I was kind of the first television generation.
Right.
And we would see a picture come on with this big pill. And you didn't know what this pill was.
Right.
And then you'd see a man with a hammer hitting his head.
Right.
And you would say, wow, this hammer is, wow,
yes.
This is terrible.
Anacin.
This is, right, Anacin.
Yeah.
I'm a 5 or 6 year old looking at a TV screen. I say, wow, this is the age to, you take one of these, or you do one of these,
right,
and it's going to change you from a hammer in your head to smiling and playing in the playground.
Right.
At that age, people are very impressionable.
Right. But, you know, also that generation, you were born in 47?
46, yeah.
46. Well, you look 40, that you were born at 47.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
A bus driver told me that. My last birthday, I'm in a bus.
Right.
And the bus driver says, you seem happy. I said, yeah, it's my birthday. He said, how old are you? I said, 69. He says, you don't look 69. I said, really, how old do I look? He goes, 68.
Everyone's a comedian.
really.
But the you were born. Now I forgot what I was going to say because.
Excuse me.
It's my fault.
It's not. It's menopause and another product that I use that I think affects your memory. Now, so in 47, you know. Oh yes.
There was, side effects. You're bringing up side effects.
Right, but no, I'm thinking what yeah. the.
Well, it pisses me off of side effects.
Yeah, but what about the side effects if you don't do it? But here's the thing is, you know, at that time, women were not really a major part of the workforce. And when I think of mothers of that generation, they were having martinis. They were taking, you know, in the 50s, 60s.
Mother's Little Helper, the
yeah,
song.
That's
they
right.
They were taking amphetamines like they were candy.
Right.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You
yeah,
know,
meth. Basically.
Can't go.
Right. And it was, you know, here are these intelligent, you know, women who have to, who are, you know, sitting at home, you know, waiting for their kids to come home from school. I mean, if I had nothing to do all day, I don't know, I'd go crazy.
You'd forget kill yourself.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, at that time, I, you know, and you mentioned that you, that they would say chemistry is the new, one of the commercials said something about, you know, use chemistry
a
now.
A better world through chemistry.
Right. And, I mean, we talk about, oh, you know, legalizing marijuana. The amount of drugs that have been used over the years. I mean, cannabis was legal until the 20s, I think. Isn't that correct?
About the 20s.
Yeah.
Right? This man, Henry Anslinger.
He was the a Surgeon General or...
Yeah, or something very
yes.
high up in the government.
Right.
And he held hearings and made it the death drug, the
right.
death thing, and it scared America.
Right.
And so there was anti-marijuana legislation that was put... Federal legislation.
Right.
One of our favorite things to do in high school was to rent the old Reefer Madness movie and get high and watch it.
Right. The Reefer Madness movie was basically a movie that was put out to show that by taking a few tokes of marijuana, you're going to become screaming mad.
Right.
Which is totally ridiculous.
Oh,
and I used to,
it's a comedy.
They used to play these videos in health class, which were like someone smoking marijuana and then like, what? And like, you know,
right.
planes
so
flying
bizarre.
Into their head and
right.
yeah. And it was.
That was after, that was a little bit after my time.
Right.
But I can understand them using that.
In the
as,
70s. That's
right.
what they would do. Meanwhile,
mm-hmm. and
you
the
know,
80s.
Woodstock. I mean.
I was in Woodstock.
I know everything about you.
I just, it was a matter of. When you grow up and people are telling you such ridiculous lies,
right.
you start to question what else they're
right.
telling you.
Oh, sure.
You know,
yeah.
It's like the boy who cried wolf. They tell you a lie, turns out to be bullshit.
Right.
They tell you another lie, turns out to be more
right.
bullshit.
Right.
And then you go, well, now the next thing you tell me, I'm supposed to listen to and say, yeah?
Yeah. Well, you were born in New Rochelle. Or no, you were born in the city.
But I was raised in New Rochelle. We moved there when I was very young.
And you had older brother and sister.
Exactly, yeah.
And, you know, I had a lot of my family lived in, my father's side lived in New Rochelle and started the synagogue, the conservative synagogue
oh, really?
There. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, and it was like a suburban Westchester upbringing.
A suburb of almost any
right.
big city in America.
And that's when the suburbs were, you know, beginning.
The main streets in the suburbs were the big thing. It wasn't the mall.
Right. It was those little mom and pop shops.
It was the mall.
Right.
There were theaters on a main street
right.
somewhere.
And there's still, New Rochelle is still like that. There's a lot of towns in Westchester that are still like
mm-hmm.
that.
New okay. Rock City.
And there's a big mall there in New Rock City. But no, but there are little streets like that, which I find to be lovely.
Well, charming.
Yeah. And now, that's what the Upper West Side was, and now, forget it.
It's still charming. The Upper Side is still... Actually, when I was coming up here, just to disagree... Not to disagree, but... it's beautiful. The buildings are beautiful.
The buildings
the
are beautiful, but
are beautiful.
The banks are really... It's
the
one
banks?
Bank.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
so many banks. And Starbucks. And your father was a dress buyer.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, cool.
Who did he buy for?
I used to come in, well, during that period of time, and before my father's time, the fashion industry was not centered here from a showroom point of view. It was in New York City from a manufacturing point of view.
Right.
This was before all the manufacturing went to China.
Right.
Before it went to India, to Pakistan, or
right.
whatever. They would make, literally, cut garments there. I remember growing up as a child, once a year my father would bring me down and walk me around to these manufacturing facilities.
In the 30th Street, like
yes,
8th Avenue?
30th,
yeah,
eighth,
yeah.
7th and 8th Avenue,
yeah.
Exactly.
Where the big button is now. They have the
exactly.
big
gas. Right, they have a big button.
All
there.
Fabric
there's
stores.
There's a tailor.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a big stone
tailor.
Yeah,
there's
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Of the tailor, exactly. And,
I love that one.
And at that and at that time, he would bring me down to see what was going on.
Right.
He would buy for a chain of stores of 12 stores in Iowa. And 16 stores in Arizona, and another
right.
12, so that they needed buying offices.
Right.
Now, Walmart has taken over all those
right,
stores,
right, right,
so
right.
they don't need a buying office. Everybody has to go to Bentonville or Arkansas.
Right.
Okay? They used to have all kinds of small department stores. And buying offices was a type of business. My father's company was one of probably hundreds that were buying offices to buy various things. He bought women's dresses. The man in the next desk may have bought hardware.
Right.
The man in the next desk may have bought...
Men's suits.
Right. Exactly. And he was a specialist in that. And he'd write orders and these manufacturers
so
would shift.
Was your mother very well-dressed?
My mother, well-dressed, humbly dressed, my mom.
Right. I mean, was he great at buying dresses?
No, it was great at buying dresses from $3.75 to $12.75.
Right.
Would then retail from $9 to $36.
So, and what would that be in today's money?
Today, that might be a dress from $25 to $60.
Oh, really?
Very low price on
right.
the low end of, not couture.
Right.
Okay. Not the girls who were walking down the fashion.
So he wasn't the one that was like, I'm going to buy this dress and it's going to be the trendy
not
style.
At all.
Okay.
Not at all. This dress is in generally was a second generation or third
right.
generation from a manufacturer who is sure that this type of dress sells well, always sells well, and would make good quality
right, right.
merchandise that they could ship out to these small department store
right.
chains. Throughout the United States.
Wow. And your mom was a homemaker.
My mom was basically a homemaker and then worked with my uncle in photography.
So very creative.
Well, yeah, she was more of the bookkeeper part of
right.
it.
Right.
I don't know where the my inventing came from. I don't
right.
think as time goes by any of us know where our destinies came
well,
from.
You know, it's probably your mother, but she could never do anything because she was a woman.
Yes, but I think it was my mother who gave me the decision to take a chance to make something. Because
right.
when you're an inventor, whatever
like,
you're inventing,
yeah.
you're in the front. You're in the front of...
Right.
And you don't know whether or not people are going to, with Easy Wider...
Right.
Okay. When I sold the company way back when...
$6.2 million.
Well, that would be $62 million
right.
today's dollars
right.
or more.
Right.
Or more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when I was selling the company, I never thought I'd be selling 78 million booklets a year.
Right, right.
I'd be in 110,000 stores.
Yeah.
When I started it, I did some research. I had written to 20 companies around the world who make
right.
booklets. Only 5 companies answered me.
Right.
I then went to... them again with more statistics and more abilities.
Right, it's all marketing.
And then once you could produce something, you have to marketing is
branding
a big percentage of.
So,
but
what,
Easy Wider had an advantage.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It was generally you. If you're making a new toothpaste.
Oh my God!
Kill me now.
This is a kill me now moment.
Kill
me
now.
That my fucking landline is ringing. Watch now; it'll say who it's from.
I hope they pronounce the name right.
Oh, there it goes. I can't. I'm not even getting it. Oh, please don't leave a message. Please don't leave a message. This is so fucking annoying. We're not recording in my house anymore. Let's see who it is.
Yeah, this edits. It's easy.
Yeah.
It's so easy.
I'm returning your call.
Thank you.
Are you interrupting the podcast?
Yes, you are.
Sorry, I am. Okay, I'll just work. Bye-bye.
That could not have been more perfect.
But she knows she's interrupting the podcast, and yet she still calls.
Hey, what's up? Am I interrupting the podcast?
Hey, am I interrupting the podcast? Sorry if I am. All right. So you invented Easy Winder because there was a need for it. When you were a kid, when you were younger, like, I know that Easy Winder was, like, your first huge invention. But when you were a kid, were you good with your hands, you know?
Yes, generally I went to woodshop and enjoyed woodshop.
Jew in woodshop?
Yeah, and when I took specialty drawing in terms of mechanical drawing.
Right.
I was very good at mechanical drawing.
And like engineering.
And engineering types of things. I always wanted to improve. Now at home, I have a list of things, and some of them I've made models of,
right,
of other products that I would intend to make, I had the financing or the time.
Right.
Right now, I've decided to stick with the utensils that I showed you.
Yes,
before.
We will be discussing those, which I enjoy.
Right. No, but it's like I'm always trying to say, well, how can it be better? Even if
right.
in a simple way, sometimes very small changes make great improvements.
Like, you gave me this pen, this Evo pen.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which is in the museum, MoMA.
It used to sell in MoMA. Now you just Google it on.
Okay. I have arthritis.
Right.
Okay. And when I handwrite a lot because I find it to be, you know, much more
like
creative. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. And I have a huge callus.
Well, the reason you have a callus is because it's the body's way of showing you.
Right.
That's,
you right. know. And this pen is tiny, and, you know, it's...
It'll fit into any pocket.
It'll fit into your... It's so... I have a kill me... this is such a great... Like, I could write with this all day, and it would have no effect on my hand.
I had no idea you had arthritis.
Yeah, who knew? I have arthritis.
It's
the greatest pen, EVO. I love it.
Yeah,
and it's
well
made.
It's
hefty.
It's beautiful.
It's a work of art. It's made in the United States, and
I enjoy.
Which is very minimalist.
Right.
It's what's called the write out is a ballpoint.
Right.
A tungsten carbide ball in a brass seat.
Right.
Tungsten carbide is really one of the hardest materials that are known. And that's why you have a nice write-out.
And it feels like it's just an extension of your hand.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's not
so
like
it's
you're
ergonomic.
Manipulating your hand to fit this.
I'm proud to say that pen and models were accessioned into the permanent collection of the Smithsonian.
Oh yeah, Bert!
That's
Shabbat shalom to Bert.
Nachas,
you bring me Nachas. So wait, so Bert, you grew up. New Rochelle, you went to summer camp, Jewy summer camp?
Yes, well, pretty much, yes. I was a very, very big camper. I liked athletics, I liked being outdoors very much. So I went to camp from when I was...
Which camp?
I went to Camp Beaverkill in upstate New York.
Very nice, Beaverkill.
Not too far from the Beaverkill stream.
Mm-hmm.
Not too far from a town called Livingston Manor.
Mm-hmm.
Or next largest would be Liberty. Which
right,
was,
yes, I know Liberty.
20 miles away.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then you continue on down to Monticello.
Right.
And then you get to finally New York. But about 125 miles in the north.
Right.
Up in the mountains where it would be nice and cool.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. It was...
It's a very chewy thing.
I really missed out on the Jew camp.
It's a dream. You're living in heaven. They force you to play.
Right. That's the thing. Like, my kids
you
go...
You can't sit on the bed.
You don't know how many people say to me, oh, your kids go to camp for 7 weeks?
And I'm like, what?
I couldn't be without them. Then you're fucking mentally ill. Let your kids go. My kids go to camp. They're not allowed to use their phones.
It was the best thing. They can't wait. It may have been the best part of my
life
and growing up and learning values and learning sports that I
But also learning how to negotiate, how to live in a group.
Right. There were 10 beds
right.
in each bunk. There were 2 counselor beds and eight kids.
And your parent, you're learning yourself.
Right.
Not your parents saying, you know, it is such, I hated camp because I was 6 feet tall at 12. And then they had the open shower, you know, where, it, you know, it was just, you know, spurts coming out, you know, like little, and like, you know, in a gas chamber, you know, like some, like in a, not in a gas chamber, but you know what I mean? In these open showers.
It didn't make you happy.
Well, I'm 6 feet and they're all like, you know, 4'11" and their heads are, you know, in my vagina. Like, I have to tell you, I wore a bathing suit. After I was like, oh my God.
I always wore a bathing suit after gym.
I would always like, it, no, at the,
I know.
The open shower.
But we had
like,
to well, also.
There for whatever.
Yeah,
for
and then
there.
Someone like wrote when I left, they engraved in the wall, Bigfoot slept here.
What a fucking dick.
Fucking fuck you, whoever you are, you motherfucker.
They're dead. Don't worry.
All right, to me. But anyway, summer camp is amazing. I went to music camp, which was really fun.
Well,
but yeah.
Camp, in any camp, whether it be music camp, whether it be horseback riding, whatever camp it is, you put in, I think, my son Jordan went to camp in Maine for a number of years.
Which one?
I'm forgetting the name right here.
My mother went to camp in Maine.
Yeah. It's a bit cold for me up there, actually.
Yeah, I know.
But,
no, but yeah, it's so, like, you know, Jews do it. Non-Jews are like, oh, my kid's going to 4-H camp for 2 weeks. I don't know what I'm going to do. You know what you're going to do? You're going to have a relationship with your husband. You're going to do all, you know, let your kid go.
I think it was also a good thing for my parents.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Because I had an older brother and sister, I was still the one that was holding them back from maybe doing some things.
Right.
And
were you a mistake?
Well, something that lived with me and still does.
Oh, I'm glad I could
bring that up. Every time I would sneeze, my father would say, God bless you and keep you, because I can't afford you. And so
that really is a great thing to say to a
That would stay
that
with
kind
you
of
forever.
Me out for a long time.
Oh my God!
I bet she had no idea.
You're right. I then went to my mother and said, "I want to go to a psychiatrist." Mom.
Right. Oh, I remember reading this. You were like 13,
right?
And did you get bar mitzvahed?
I did. I'm philosophically Buddhist now,
right?
But I was brought up not religiously Jewish,
but observant,
but conservative.
Yeah,
it was a conservative. The Jews have three types. There's the Orthodox
conservative, Reformed.
And in the Rochelle where I was brought up, there were each type.
Right.
And we were in the middle. We were conservative.
Right.
That means there was some English in our...
Yeah, and Hebrew.
And women and men could sit together.
That's how I grew up, too.
Right.
Sluts, all of you.
I can't with the Orthodox. But, so you... but, you know, my synagogue here now, they have meditation services now. Like, they have incorporated...
Other thinking.
Right.
So you're 13.
The thing I like about Buddhists is that if you're a Buddhist, if you want to be Jewish, you can be a Buddhist Jew.
Right.
If you want to be Baptist, you could be a Buddhist Baptist. If you want to be Catholic, you could be a Buddhist Catholic.
Right.
Whereas if you wanted to be a Buddhist and you were Jewish, the Jews would say no.
Right.
You have to stay Jewish.
Right.
If you wanted to be Catholic, the Catholics would say no, you can't
be
Buddhist.
Well, they say no to everything.
Indeed, they do.
Except little boys. Hey-o.
Yay. Good night, folks. We'll be here all week.
That's a whole other conversation.
Yeah. Oh, yes, it
what
is.
Pisses me off.
Yeah. Oh, yes. A little body what?
But, so you asked to go to a psychiatrist, and you mentioned, that you said other friends were going to psychiatrists, and I thought, really? At that age?
Yeah, I thought, I said, you
very
know.
Very self-aware.
I think it was... Johnny was going to a psychiatrist, David, Gary. And I
they
said,
were?
Like, they
did,
were.
Did they ask or did their parents?
In New Rochelle at the time, New Rochelle and Mount Vernon, where I grew up, that was fairly, it was kind of standard.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, enough that, well, just like, I wouldn't say it's the same, an exact analogy, but divorce was standard in my
right,
my,
and that was the beginning
of my generation.
Right.
I take 12 guys I went to college with here at NYU.
Right.
11 out of 12 got divorced at least once. At least once.
Right.
So I can't say that. I would kind of think of that
as a
philosophical phenomenon,
right,
as opposed to just Bert being a problem because he can't get along with his wife.
Right. But, so, all right, so you're 13, you're like, I want to go to a psychiatrist.
I want to go to a psychiatrist.
And what do your parents say?
Well, my mother said, I'm sorry, Bert, we can't afford psychological problems.
And then God bless you.
And then God bless you and have a good night's sleep.
We can't afford psychological problems.
They were not real problems. They're
right.
Psychological problems.
What are you doing with the making noise?
The people who are having problems are the Syrians. They're having
right.
problems.
Yes, I agree.
Okay? My problems were I was biting my nails.
Yeah, I do that too. Do you still do it?
No, I stopped at about 23. I got after it. And I went to, and I've gone to shrinks subsequent to that. Okay.
So when was the first time you went to a shrink?
When I got married, I found myself unhappy.
Right. Oh, that's unusual. Bing, bing, bing. You win the prize. Yeah.
I found myself unhappy, and I couldn't understand why. And, you know, it was like if I went out to the basketball game on Wednesday
right.
nights and was supposed to finish at 10 o'clock, and the game was good, so we played till 10:30.
Right.
As soon as I came home, I got shit.
Oh, my God. Hello? Where were you? This is before cell phones, so you can't say game's running long.
Right. No,
right.
This is way before.
Where were you? Who were you with?
Okay. Now,
Bert!
Oh, my
same.
God.
Now, if the,
yeah.
the next week
PTSD.
I came home early because the game was bad,
yeah.
it was, what happened? How come you're home early?
Yeah.
So now,
you can't fucking win.
So like,
I have the same shit.
I couldn't win.
Right.
And so I went to my shrink, and he said, well, when did this start happening? And I explained to him, and he said, well, your wife might be the problem. And
smart.
I said, what, why? I mean, he says, because there's this constant thread that's continuing and continuing
right.
and continuing. That it's
pattern,
not,
yeah.
Yeah, this pattern that if you take your wife out of the pattern, it's not going
to
happen.
Right.
And
what's
getting
his name
more thought
to go,
this was many.
yeah.
This was many. 40, probably.
Right.
Dead. So that was one time.
No.
Another time when one of the things about Easy Wider was that I was, as much as I enjoy and believe in marijuana, I don't for cocaine.
Right.
And because they're all illegal.
Right.
Underground, they move in the same on the same roads,
right?
On the same whatever,
right?
You know, to
they
a great
both have
extent,
to be smuggled.
Right.
Right? They both have to be smuggled. It's,
right.
They're dealing with the same people overseas,
right.
Et cetera, et cetera. Unfortunately,
right?
I personally think it should be handled that all drugs should be legal. You
mm-hmm.
just have to take a 2-month course in the drug, and you decide for yourself what
like
you want to do,
like a gun.
Right.
Like a gun. You could take a 2-month
course,
you pass
inhaling it.
Right.
Well, one of the things about camp was, the NRA at that time was how to safely use a rifle.
Right.
That's
smart.
That's how it started.
That's how, when I was, it was like, we part of camp was riflery. That was
really?
That was one of the things
wow.
we did.
Wow.
I used to play a lot of tennis, but
right.
most of it was rifle. So once a week, you'd go to the riflery.
Did anyone get shot? Like
never.
You
it was always
stole my, you know,
no.
Bagel. Yeah.
When when I was growing up, people got beat up. They didn't
right.
get shot.
Right. Exactly. See, I'll see you at the schoolyard.
Right.
You know, that's the way.
Exactly.
It, right.
We'll see you after school. Right. And you'd sew with your hands.
Right.
You'd go, and maybe some guy would get a bloody eye, a bloody
right.
nose.
Right.
And he'd run home crying, and that'd be the end of that story.
Right.
Fisticuffs.
Yeah.
So you're
no guns.
Now you graduate college.
NYU.
You went to NYU. You're living down on Bleecker or Thompson Street.
When I went to college,
yeah,
I went. We lived on Thompson between right. Bleecker and Houston.
Right.
That's there's an apartment.
Perfect.
Three guys. I got a really good marijuana story with these three guys.
Right.
These two other friends. They're both named Steve. One of right. them, unfortunately, passed away.
The Steves.
But the Steves sent a bongo drum full of marijuana from Jamaica to my apartment.
No way.
That's fantastic.
How was it delivered? United States Post Office?
Was it delivered?
What happened, if you want the story?
Yes.
Is these were my two roommates, and we were three of us were living here in Lincoln Towers at 70th.
Oh,
and
yeah,
West
very nice
70th and West End Avenue on a high floor with the
right.
towers. It was a two bedroom apartment. We converted it into three
to Judaism.
The
we
three
converted
of us
it to Judaism.
The three of us are living there,
yeah,
with the Trinity.
And all of a sudden, we get a call from my two ex roommates. Steve, they're back from Jamaica. Why are you so back from Jamaica?
Right.
Well, we thought we would export marijuana from Jamaica, and we put it in bongo drums, and we were shipping the bongo drums up to you to the apartment. And the next day in the Montego Bay Times, we see the front page with pictures of bongo drums.
No.
With the comment, stupid Americans sending marijuana.
No way!
Up with bongo drums. Everything's quiet. Nothing's happening. All of a sudden, Peter Stern, Steve's brother, is home. Gets a knock on the door.
Police.
No, not the police.
FBI.
It's the United States Post Office.
Right.
And they deliver the bongo drum.
No way.
Yeah, they deliver the bongo drum. But 5 minutes later, there's another knock at the door.
Right.
And it's the police.
Right.
The father was a sergeant in the police department.
No way.
They called
him. Steve's father.
And Peter's
Paul Stern.
No, it wasn't Paul.
Oh, all right, whatever.
I don't recall.
There was a guy. All right, yeah, okay. Yeah.
They bust the apartment. But since the father was a cop, the father comes in, punches his son in the face because of being a bad boy.
Right.
The word comes out, they're all leaving, the police, that we have to be completely out of the apartment within 24 hours.
Oh.
They're coming back in 24 hours, and if there's anybody there, those people will be busted.
In that specific apartment.
In that specific apartment. Which was completely furnished.
Right.
We lost the place, and we moved out of the place.
What a bummer.
Because my two closest friends, they still are my closest friends, but subsequently to that, I went to South America with
right.
them, I went to Cambodia with them, I've been
That's
to
a great
solar
story.
Eclipses with them,
right.
et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, my God.
Okay. But
and they
get,
never, didn't they think, oh, my God, it smells?
Whatever it was. It was an unknown how everything in your life could change in
right.
a moment.
Now,
unbelievable.
So that was.
So they learned. They learned how to pack it up better now. I hope.
Well, they're not in that business.
Yeah,
they've grown, become stock
Warren.
They should have known me.
Okay, wait. So you're at NYU, and now I did read a story that the U.S. Post Office. Speaking of U.S. Post Office. Had a campaign where you could send in an idea for a stamp, and you sent in a stamp with the fallout shelter sign.
Yes, exactly.
Which is, did your parents say, oh my God, Burke is brilliant.
No.
I know you can't afford him, but you have to admit that is a brilliant stamp.
No, it was. No. As a matter of fact, I still see them on the walls of...
I still see them. Yeah, I'm from my childhood.
There's one.
They're all
on the building, very nearby, or on your building.
There's one on our building.
Right. And,
yeah.
It basically was a way at that time. The fears now that the kids have of, the government hasn't decided what it's going to call it.
Right.
They haven't decided whether they're going to call it Daesh, ISIS,
right.
ISIL. And I'm sure they
assholes.
Have assholes. Right. There's a few
mental,
other,
yeah.
There's a few other terms that could be surely used.
Right.
And so the fear now, and true fear amongst children, I'm sure.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Yeah, my son, who's never, he's in college now, he's never been, you know, it's like they get to an age where they don't feel invincible anymore.
Right.
And he's 19 and he's coming home for Christmas. He said, I'm not going anywhere near Times Square. That's what he said to me.
Yeah, okay.
My other son's school is in Times Square, which is awful.
Unfortunately, you know, for me, I was at 8th Street, Washington Square, and I saw the second plane
hit
the tower and watched the towers collapse and ran from the debris.
Right.
So was my, if you're looking for a hate everything moment.
Right. Kill me now.
Kill me now. That was it. And everything pretty much changed in my life.
I agree.
From that point on.
That moment must have changed your brain chemistry.
Well, it did. I can't look at planes now. Now, I have been to 60, well, if you include America, 68 countries. And some of them 5 times.
Right.
Okay.
Favorite. What's your favorite?
I only count them once. America.
Yeah, me too. I have to tell you. I
love to live in America.
Right. I was in Canada recently for, you know, 2 weeks doing a show.
Right.
And no matter where I am, when I get to America and I go through, and I want to hug the customs people.
No, for sure.
Thank you. Thank you for speaking that. Well, you know, it's like...
No, I know exactly what you mean.
I see that flag. I'm like, you know, that we have to live in this sort of police state.
It's very scary.
And I think it was a great idea to go into Iraq.
Well,
you know, I thought that was terrific.
George Bush was real smart.
Last night I said on stage, I said, you know, I think we finally found the weapon of mass destruction, the NRA, I'm sure I'll get in trouble for, but that is
of course
what,
you will.
Well,
good for you.
I've learned to appreciate a lot more is the Atlantic and Pacific Ocean.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, the reason the Syrians are streaming into Greece and then through there and going up into Europe is because they can do it by walking.
Right.
You're not going to walk across the Atlantic.
Right. Well, unless God parts it.
Well,
he parted the Dead Sea. Now, wait. So you're
a lot more work.
You're on Thompson. You're going to Cafe Agogo, where I have to tell you, I performed. So I started performing in the 80s, and I went to.
We're talking 64 to 68.
Yeah. But all those places, like, you remember Art DeLugoff.
Right.
His son. I knew Art, and his son has been a friend of mine for years. We used to play piano together.
I didn't know his son.
I did know Art. Raphael.
Because it was right on the corner of Bleecker and Thompson.
Right, and I used to go
in
there.
That blonde,
he used to stand up.
Yeah. Building, right, with black doors.
And, you know,
doors.
A few weeks ago, I shot a show at the Bitter End. And I was
Which
like,
is right across the
yes,
street.
And I was like, oh, my God, you know, I was 20 years old. Come these places.
Well, that's why New York is still. I mean, I love being here. You have a tremendous quality of energy here.
Right.
And walking down the street and seeing a Korean girl walking with a black girl, walking with a Jewish kid, walking with a Irish child, and they're all giving each other high fives, and laughing. You don't find that anywhere.
You know, it's amazing for you know my kids.
You don't.
And then, you know, gay parents. You know, they have gay kids, they have transgender kids.
Well, right.
They could give two shits.
Well,
it's like, oh, mommy, guess what? So-and-so just came out. They could fucking, they don't care.
We're very lucky to live. When I talk to people and they say, well, could you live in New York? I say, because you get more intellectual space than anywhere.
How could you not, like... I grew up in the suburbs. You grew up in the suburbs.
Right.
My mother grew up 2 blocks away in the city.
Oh, yes?
Yeah, 94th Street. And she always, my entire, and I had a lot of relatives here on the Upper West Side. And all my childhood, I remember her, you know, it's I can't sleep. It's too quiet. We would come on a 3 times a year, just the two of us, to go buy shoes because I was a size 12 at 12. And there was only one shoe store.
So.
There was only one shoe store that sold It's called Tall Gal Shoes. It was on 38th Street across from the New York Public Library. Mm-hmm. And we would come in, and I have to tell you, the minute she stepped foot on the island of Manhattan, it was like another human being. And she always said, I would pitch a tent in Times Square if I could. And it, you know,
it's obviously stayed with you.
Right.
You live in a very comfortable, nice home.
I love the city.
My kids.
I was in L.A. on a sitcom when Henry was born. And it was either, I can stay here and be on TV, or I can move back to New York. And it was hard because I was really hot at the time. Like, I was really working all the time on every show. I had an HBO special. You know, it was great. But I thought, all I ever wanted was for my children to grow up in New York.
Yeah, I'm very happy Jordan did.
Yeah.
Very happy.
Your son's a comedian, Jordan Rubin,
yes,
and a director.
Right.
But we're not talking about him. Anyway, so you're on to...
I hope he's taken his high energy of doing things from me.
Absolutely. Oh. He's a great comic.
No, no question.
We might have to have him on to talk
high
about
energy,
you.
High energy is, you know, when you were kind enough to invite me on to discuss, you know, some things, you know, it was like... I was thinking and writing a list.
Right.
And one of the things I put on the list was the word time, meaning the importance of it.
Yes.
Okay, and doing it. And like in New York, you know, during the week I can get my bicycle and go anywhere. I can walk anywhere.
Wait.
I can subway.
Bert, we should get married. First of all, I ride my bike everywhere. You can ask Lauren.
True.
The other night, you know, my brother was coming in from Arizona. I have saddlebags on my body and my bike. And I go, I can fit 4 bags of groceries. I come home. He lives in Arizona. I'm like, can you help me with the groceries? I'm on my bike. I give him the saddle. You know, you can walk.
Like
you can take the bus.
It's beautiful.
You can take the subway. You know, the thing about, and I love that you mentioned time, because often, you know, I value time more than money. So when someone says to me...
Right. You can get a lot more money.
Right.
You can't get more time.
Right. And so when someone says, oh, I'm going to take the shuttle to that, I'm going to wait, then I'm going to the airport, to the this. To me, spending money on having more time, even a nap, like... You know, if I see that the subways aren't running, will I spend money? Yes, I will, because my time is valuable. I'm not going to...
Because
you know,
you end up spending, you know, depending on what you are and who you do, but you end up spending just as much money based on that time you lost. Anyway,
well, some people, like my father was a depression baby. He would drive a half an hour to get a cheap, 2 cents cheaper gas.
Same as my father.
Right. So, and what's the point? You're using more gas
to get there.
Right? And it's an hour when it could be 5 minutes. You know, to me, that mentality of, oh, I'm going to drive here because there's a bargain, you know, okay, so it's $10 more expensive here, and you have the whole afternoon.
Well, I appreciate
and the gas
walking.
That goes the
walking,
whatever
I think
it
the
is.
Walking is very important. And that,
walking is...
That it's like, you live here at... And although I live on another part of town in Manhattan, both of us within probably 3 blocks have 5 Chinese restaurants we could go to, 6 Thai restaurants we could find, at least 3 Greeks, some pizzerias.
Great. Mexican.
They have to be good
because
they'll be out of business in 6 months if they're not good.
Right.
Exactly, yeah. Same
and
here.
Some
I live
of them,
in Queens.
And some of them have been here forever.
For a long
you know?
Time, right.
So... So you're at your apartment in Thompson Street, and
actually, after I go to school, after I graduate,
well,
from
you
NYU,
worked as the head of catering at NYU.
I was
a
catering manager,
because you had started as a bartender, then a waiter,
and then
you're making $200 a week
at that time, which seemed like a good money.
That's a lot of money,
right? In 64, making $200 a week,
mm-hmm. That's a
but
lot.
But I was working. I was going to school full time. One year, because that's the way I lived in terms of keeping busy. I was president of my fraternity.
What fraternity?
Phi Epsilon Pi. I was voted best athlete in the fraternity system.
No way.
Jock.
I was
nerd. You're
going
nerd.
To school full time.
Right.
And working full time.
Right. And you didn't smoke.
I didn't smoke marijuana. I smoked cigarettes.
Right. Marlboros time. Because you like the Marlboro commercial.
Of course.
Huh. Right.
How did you know?
Because I read. Okay, so then.
You're a cowboy and a badass.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Actually, I learned right nearby here, in fact, the stable is the riding stable.
Yes, 88th Street.
Right. And I took riding lessons and jumping lessons.
No way.
Yeah, that was cool.
Jumping is great for you.
Well, jumping was okay to a certain point.
Well, now my trainer...
My bones don't fix as well as they could, so I'm going to fall.
You know, my trainer, it makes me go on the trampoline. And
that's good for timing.
And it's very good for your lymphatic system. And he just taught me how to run on it. The motion of running, and it's my heart rate goes. I sweat so much. I'm getting one for this.
A friend of mine just got me a quite a good, what do you call it, bicycle?
Yeah.
Stable bike.
Yeah.
Stationary.
But I walk at least, I have a little Havanese dog.
Oh, very cute.
Okay.
You know, and my friend Susie Essman says guys with small dogs are like the best.
Well, what happens is...
Because they're secure of their masculinity enough to have a small dog?
Yeah. Also, my previous dogs were larger. One was a golden retriever and one was a yellow lab. But this time, also, I've been to Cuba twice.
Right.
Nice.
Since, have you been since we...
No, not since the daytime.
Creation.
No.
Okay.
I had been there in like 1998 and maybe 2004.
Right.
Or 2006. And I found it to be, it's not an island, it's a country.
Right.
It's very different.
Right.
It's 900 miles long.
Right.
It's very sophisticated. It was the richest city in the Western Hemisphere for many years.
And there's Jews there, Jubans.
What? Oh, big time.
Yeah.
A lot of Chinese, too. In fact, Chinese cemeteries.
Wow.
It's just special.
So what about the St. Louis, the ship that, you know, that they turned back... That Roosevelt turned back.
No, that's
the Jews.
That part I don't know.
They came to Florida and then they tried to go to Cuba. Yeah, but
I know. That's during the Roosevelt time, and I'm not sure. I don't know the history.
Right. Okay. So you're at NYU. You're living in Top Street. You're working full time. The first time. Now you're around people who are smoking.
Okay.
And Frank Zappa lived in your building.
Frank Zappa lived in my building. There were the Mothers of Invention was the
group. Right.
The Mothers of Invention.
Yes, I remember.
All of them lived in the building.
And first night ever.
I wasn't smoking marijuana when I decided to smoke.
Right.
Because my two roommates were.
Right. Steve's?
The two Steve's.
Yes, yeah, Steve's.
And everything was wonderful. I'll see you soon. Thank you for the visit. So long.